Kruger to Canyon Biosphere. And today we are talking specifically a little bit more on the corridor project. Angie is in studio. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you.
Angie's just here for moral support to make sure we behave ourselves here. But Romy, welcome in studio. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
And Romy, as I do with all my people that I interview, that people are so curious, so they want to know a little bit about your background. We can't leave here without it. At least you don't need to have a blood test and a DNA test done, but just give us a little breakdown of where you went to school, you studied, where you grew up, and how you landed up here in Hoedspruit.
Okay, so I think like many of us, I'm Joburg born and bred. Went to school, high school in Joburg. I studied at Wits University. I then went on to do my master's in environmental science and conservation. And I did my research up in the northern Kruger in the Porphyry area on the Makuleki wetlands, which was amazing. And then in Joburg, I got into the environmental consulting space, a lot of it on environmental impact assessments, which was a bit soul-destroying. So I then took a leap of faith and moved into the NGO sector, which is something I'd always wanted to be in, and I started working for BirdLife South Africa in their common habitats and protected area expansion projects. And my husband and I had been trying to get out of Joburg for a while and looking for various opportunities.
But must stop you there. Was your husband in the same industry? Did you meet at varsity?
No, not at all. Yeah, we met at university.
Okay.
We both happened to study geography, but that's about where the similarities ended. I was doing a science degree and he was doing an arts degree, and he was a musician and a drummer.
Completely different.
In Joburg, so totally different. Anyway, and then he actually got a job at Southern Cross to teach. So we packed everything up. We got told we had 2 months to be here, so we packed everything up and moved to Hoedspruit.
First time you'd been here?
No, we had been here before, and we knew it was a place we had friends, and we knew we liked the lifestyle, and it was somewhere we were trying to get to. So the deal was, whoever got a job first, we would take the plunge. So we did, and that was in 2018. And then I started with the K2C at the end of that year. Working on one big project that they were running at the time. And yeah, so we've been here since 2018.
It's a long time. Hey?
Yeah.
And obviously, is hubby still teaching at Southern Cross?
No, he's not actually. he now works for GKIP.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic.
Pilot. That was the other side thing he was doing. He flies airplanes.
So wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. And for you joining this wonderful organization, you've obviously had to grow with them and learn as you go along. And they've obviously got different departments where you go into to grow. And this one specifically that we are speaking about today is what's called the corridors. Can you give us more of an overview of what that actually means and what it signifies?
Sure. So, the K2C corridor, as our name implies, Kruger to Canyons, it's always been a long-term vision and goal of the biosphere is to create conservation corridors that link Kruger to the escarpment. Way back in 2001, when the biosphere was designated, this was a vision that people were hoping to achieve. And
did that fall under the UNESCO?
Yeah.
So the UNESCO site under the Man and Biosphere Program.
Yeah. So the region was identified as a biodiversity hotspot and an area where we were trying to integrate sustainable development projects and livelihood project with people with the conservation of nature. And it's always been a real vision to create this corridor from east to west. So a lot of people have said in the past that Kruger is amazing, and it's an amazing wildlife conservancy, but it runs from north to south and protects a lot of savanna system and not much else. So ideally, Kruger should actually run from east to west between the escarpment and the lowveld for it to protect a greater range of species and diversity, and water systems is another big thing. Because all our water falls in the mountain, a disproportionate amount of our water falls on the escarpment area, and then that flows down into the rivers that we all depend on here in the lowveld. I mean, I think we're all aware there's even a difference between Compass Riss and Hoedspruit when it comes to rainfall.
Absolutely. Rainfall, climate, water, without a doubt.
Exactly.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. So, a couple of years ago, under the two big JEF-funded projects, we focused on one element was on expanding Bladder River Canyon Nature Reserve to include the Mareepscorp area. So that we worked on with the communities that have claimed that land back. We got them on board and MTPA, and we increased the Bladder River Canyon by 16,000 hectares. And then the other portion was working with sand parks and the landowners in the Kruger Open System to get all those reserves in line with the Protected Areas Act, and which is still a bit of work in progress.
But does that include letting down fences?
So in the open system, it did. So it did. Part of the agreement, if you want to drop fences with Kruger and be open to Kruger, there are certain criteria you need to tick, certain things you need to do, and one of them is you need to be a formal protected area under the Protected Areas Act. Some of those areas were historically under the old legislation, and they needed to be brought on board. You need to assign a management authority, and you need to have a proper management plan in place. So those were all things that those reserves had to do in order to be part of the bigger system. And now that those two projects have tied up, we're now looking at trying to fill the gap in the middle and look at securing what remaining natural habitat there is that links that Kruger Open System to the escarpment. Because historically, animals would have migrated all the way up to the mountains and back. And now, obviously, there's the risk of agricultural expansion, residential development. Those remaining corridors are slowly but surely disappearing. So we're really looking at trying to protect those. So working with the landowners, just to say that doesn't necessarily mean dropping fences. That's entirely up to the landowners whether they want to do that or not. So, I mean, it would be amazing if we had elephants going from Kruger all the way up to the mountains one day.
Beautiful.
But that's not an immediate priority, and that really depends on landowners. And in some places it might happen, and that might be possible.
Yeah.
But really, we want just an ecologically intact system that links Kruger to the escarpment.
And in terms of the species that you want to focus on, with regards to the corridor, iconic species, can you give us a bit more of an overview of that?
I mean, it's broad. Up in the mountains in the escarpment, there's a lot of endemic plant species. And then, obviously, our focus is along the rivers, so along the river corridors, and those are important for things like hippos move up and down those corridors. The vultures rely heavily on those corridors for nesting and the remaining tall trees.
And is that the Cape Black vulture that you're referring to?
The white-backed.
The
white-backed
are the most common. One. Because, you know, the Cape Black, there's a breeding pair along the...
Yeah.
The Drakensberg.
At Manutsa there.
At Manutsa, hey. Yeah. I mean, I know they're over 800 breeding pairs.
Yeah.
So does that fall under your region at all?
Yes,
it does.
So Cape Vulture, so we actually declared Cape Vulture Nature Reserve last year, so
okay,
we've been
fantastic.
Working with them. They are one of our properties, and we're now facilitating helping them put together their management plan. So Cape Vulture is now officially a protected area. Which is fantastic.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. I've been there myself, and it's definitely an outing worth its while in many phases to go and have a look at that. It's spectacular.
Absolutely.
So as we carry on with regards to the species that you are trying to look at protecting, I see that there's the Pell's fishing owl.
Yeah, so I think we all know Pell's, which a lot of people are dying to see. They nest along the river systems, and they also depend heavily on those big riverine trees and a functional river system as well. So that's another thing. And then obviously species things like we all know the wild dogs. Fences aren't really a deterrent for wild dogs.
Yeah.
They move through those fences. And then leopards obviously are another big one.
Yes.
The leopards...
They
move through those fences without much trouble. So to allow them to disperse and move from, you know, one protected area to another.
And I mean, obviously, conservation mechanisms. I mean, there's so much involved. You know, we don't realize that to have a lodge, or to run a game reserve, or how many components there are that one has to follow to make this as a healthier environment for people. To people not just living, working. What is the conservation mechanism that you're trying to show here? I see a private, commercial, protected areas. Then you've got your agreements, secure landscape, core state-owned protected areas. Is that how you break it down?
Yeah, so like you say, it's fairly complicated, and there's a hierarchy system. So I think Nick explained last week that South Africa has actually been incredibly successful and at the forefront of protected areas and protected area expansion globally, because we actually have a national initiative that allows for private landowners and community-owned land to be declared as a protected area. So to get the same protection status as a state-owned reserve. And they've structured a whole system that there are incentives and things and support built in for landowners to go that route if they would like to. So to clarify, if you put a fence around a property and you call it a game reserve, or you call it a nature reserve, that doesn't make it a protected area. You need to, again, like I said, there's certain criteria you need to meet, and you need to get it declared with the help of your provincial conservation agency. So in our area, it would be MTPA, or in Limpopo, LEDET. And you need to go through the process of actually formally declaring that property as a protected area. And then you get formal protected area status. And there are various benefits that come with that. But they're also responsibilities that come with that. You have to have a management plan in place, you need to manage for conservation, and you need to have a management authority that manages the property appropriately.
And if you look at the project itself, the corridor project, what does that want to achieve at the end of the day? I mean, if I look at some of the points here, work with development and agricultural sectors, water security. So are those the features and the points that's what it actually wants to ultimately achieve at the end of the day?
Yeah, ultimately. And like I said, really what we want is an ecologically functioning system that runs from the mountain down to the Lowveld, into Kruger, and then ultimately into Mozambique. And just to say, obviously, protected area, so nature reserve is the primary most protected level you can get to, but there'll be landowners where that doesn't necessarily suit landowners. So things like a lot of the areas along the corridor are owned by the agricultural sector or wildlife estates that wouldn't necessarily qualify as nature reserves, but there are other agreements and other mechanisms we can work with to legally secure that land for conservation in the future. And that's something through this project that we want to do, is engage more with other sectors and other landowners to find ways that we can benefit each other and agree to
and
to
work
protect.
harmoniously
exactly.
together.
Exactly,
and yeah. There's a little insert here. It says, how can you help? What can landowners do to assist in this project? Because surely there's something everybody can do to contribute to this.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the first thing is just awareness, building and being aware of these areas and that they're important to keep intact. Obviously, people who own land in these corridors could look into what the options are for them if they would be interested in securing their land for conservation in the long term. And we're working with a lot of private landowners that have approached us around that. And if maybe a nature reserve isn't viable for you, what are the other kind of mechanisms or legal structures we could look at? An agreement with the biosphere possibly, or something like that. And I think I think that's it really, is just working together. I think that's what's important, is it's really like building a puzzle with lots of different landowners, different land uses, and how we work together as a landscape to benefit the landscape as a whole. And I think it's important for all of us who live in this area. It's why we love this area, is because it's got this conservation ethos and these wild spaces. So I think it's up to all of us to maintain that, in the future. And this is one way to do that, to secure it forever, hopefully.
Definitely forever, Romy. Romy, and just another thing with regards to, obviously there's so many farms around here. And do the farming community, does it have any impact on what you're trying to achieve?
So it does, and especially along the Blader River system, which we all rely on for water, and the riverine forest along the Blader is actually a threatened ecosystem, and not a lot of it is formally protected. So a lot of the agricultural sector border the river, so we would like to partner with them and engage more with them on how they look after that river system, keep a bit of a buffer along the corridor, don't encroach too much. And then also try and maintain alien invasive trees and species that start taking hold in that area.
And obviously crop spraying and
all those,
and those water are use. All realities because they've got to export products and
exactly. And their ways, and we're not expecting them to stop doing that at all. It's about how we find a mutually beneficial solution to that. And if there are ways that maybe we could work with their export requirements through Global GAP, potentially they could get extra points if they're part of the corridor system, things like that. We'd like to unpack and understand better and see if there are ways we can help benefit the farmers for getting on board and try and protect the landscape holistically.
Oh, that's so brilliant, because that's what it is ultimately, is to be together and work together as a community to strive for the best. I mean, who doesn't want to live in Hoed Spruit? And if we've got all of this working, it brings in tourists that just come back and keeps growing our town from one side to the other. And that's what we want to do at the end of the day. Angie and Romy, thank you for coming in studio. I'm looking so forward to every week chatting to K2C. I learn so much about it, because I'm clueless about it. When when I got your message about the corridor, I also thought, oh, I better read. I've got no idea where these corridors are. But thank you so much. And it's enlightening. And I hope that each and every listener out there enjoys this and takes this information in. And stay tuned. Every Friday, we're going to be chatting to the ladies and gentlemen from K2C. And we will be growing our knowledge with them as much as we can then grow and better our town here in Hoed Spruit.